Agency tech staffs too often erase important forensic evidence after a cyber attack. Homeland Security is trying to change that so systems administrators preserve the data. And Baron DiCamillo is the director of the U.S. Computer Emergency Response Team. She tells executive editor Jason Miller about some of the disturbing trends her team sees and how agencies can avoid erasing forensic evidence after a cyber attack.
U.S. CERT has noted some general missteps that we commonly see when we're arriving on site to assist with an incident. They primarily involve the affected organization implementing reactive measures to their networks without first consulting an incident response team. You know, we do incident response for a living every day, and these are system administrators that they just do this as a secondary function. And so, first of all, we see them mitigating effective systems too early and without coordination from an incident response team. This can cause the loss of volatile data, such as memory and other host-based artifacts. We also see them touching adversary infrastructure. Seems unusual, but we do. They're pinging or doing NS lookup. They're browsing to certain sites, the command and control type sites. Agency staff is trying to investigate the incident naturally, and they want to conduct the analysis on suspicious domains or IPs. However, these actions can tip off the adversary that they've been detected. Again, a no-no. You don't want to do that. And also, sometimes they're putting those IPs into systems at the boundary, and then it's a false alarm, which happens a lot. We see in Einstein. Preemptively blocking adversary infrastructure. So they then try to block the adversary's infrastructure, and they're also tipping off the adversary to their detection of their presence within the network. It can exasperate the situation, cause the adversary to change infrastructure, and sometimes the investigators become unaware of that, and we lose visibility of the little bit of visibility that we might have had. We also see preemptive password resets. So they go out and do an enterprise-wide password reset. Preemptively, it's done before we have a chance to kind of understand the severity of the potential hooks that they have into the environment. The adversary again sees this, and then they'll change tactics, and again you've lost the visibility that you had as an investigator. And then we also see a lot of times the failure to preserve logs. Organizations are commonly rolling over data to preserve space, which is a common practice. We all do that. But when you have an incident, or when an incident breaks, a common mistake is to continue these normal procedures and then to let the data get rolled over, and it makes it really difficult for forensics to understand the activity because it's not going back far enough throughout the activity that they've reported to us because it's continuing to be rolled over. So these are some of the common things that we're seeing that we're trying to evangelize to our community so that they understand to contact incident response teams at the very beginning of an event so that we can ensure that the forensic evidence that we need to be able to confirm the kinds of activity that's happened is going to be there for them when they get there on site.
Is this just a matter of training where you just have to get the systems administrators together in a room and say the do's and don'ts? I mean, I know that I'm making it very simple, but is that a bigger piece of it, or is there more to it?
Well, it's definitely an evangelist role that we've taken on at U.S. CERT to the community. We have weekly SOC calls with the system administrators, so we are educating them on these things as they're occurring, saying, hey, by the way, call us up front of these kinds of activities to ensure that they know that they can call us, even if it's a false alarm. We would rather hear from them and be able to tell them that than to have them create mechanisms that then make it difficult for a forensic investigation. So I think there's an education part, but the world's changed a bit. So a lot of these system administrators never had the hat of doing the security, cybersecurity type work that they're doing. And so we've got to continue to educate them as they roll into new roles that they're unfamiliar with and might not have, you know, their common response as a help desk is to reimage the machine, reimage the box. And so you have to kind of educate them as they're rolling into new roles what they really need to do with these kinds of events.
In many ways, what's happening with agencies is done by contractors, when especially this level of security, is that being communicated to the contractors as well? I mean, they may be on the SOC calls, they may not be, but also they may have contracting language that says you must do X in a certain amount of time, which then potentially could hamper an investigation as well.
You hit the nail on the head. The contractors are applying very strictly to the SOPs, to the contracting constructs of which they are hired to do work. And sometimes these practices are outside the bounds of the contracting language. And so you want to ensure that you have the flexibility in your contract to allow for an incident response investigation, to allow the investigators to access the raw data, even if it's held at a third-party site, to make sure that, because we saw that happen, you know, last year in some cases, that we have access, the investigators have access to that data to ensure that it's protected from the perspective of a forensic investigation. And so making sure your contract language allows for that is also something that we've worked with different entities from GSA and others over the past year to ensure that those caveats are being added and modifications to existing contracts, because they will follow it to the letter, which sometimes can really hamper the investigation from a cyber perspective.
I'm speaking with Ann Baron DiCamillo, the director of U.S. CERT. After the panel discussion at the Next Gov Prime 2015 conference, she was also asked by other reporters about the federal data breach regulations requiring agencies to hold on to forensic evidence.
As the investigations have happened over the last 18 to 24 months that have been around data breach investigations of this type, of this scale government, we've seen the contractual bodies make modifications to regulations to ensure that the data that is going to be necessary for investigation is maintained and protected for the investigators, even outside of what the contractual language will say. And so we're seeing them make the modifications. We're providing the kinds of recommended, you know, guidance that they need to implement to make sure that you're making it easier for the investigator, not harder, because there's structural, they have to follow the structure of the contract, and we want to make sure that it doesn't impact an investigation.
Another question focused on whether U.S. CERT had enough staff to respond to incidents.
So we're not the geek squad, and we're definitely not trying to compete with private industry. There's a lot of third-party partners out there that security management firms that do incident response engagements. So the ones that we're getting engaged in is the more advanced persistent threat type activity, the ones that specifically focus on the .gov. So we're trying to work with our .gov clients and make sure that we're there when we see adversary type activity that is associated with what we call focus operations or APT. We're focused on those because those are typically the kinds of investigations that you're going to need a mature incident response team to help you not only ferret out the actor, but understand how deep and how wide they have gotten within your network.
Didn't DHS at one point set up a contract for multiple levels of incident response?
DHS has had a lot of contract vehicles over the years to try to help provide the services from contractors to help supplement the teams. We typically have federal leads for all of our incident response engagements, and then we supplement that with sometimes interagency partners and sometimes contractors to ensure that we have the right resources to address the threats that are occurring within that environment.
And then there's also the red team and the blue team efforts you guys do. Is that ramping up?
So the waiting list is quite long for those services, with the prioritization on government clients first. And we're also trying to look at the government clients that have high-value assets associated with the kinds of data sets that they house. A lot of governments and agencies have what we call bulk PII warehouses. And so we're really working with those entities, or PIH, that have large treasure troves of the kind of information we see being targeted by certain campaigns, and ensure that they're getting the prioritization of services from the health checks, the red teams, the blue teams, that can kind of help tip off if there potentially is an adversary activity that's been ongoing within their network.